Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you see how the gospel of Jesus Christ intersects with our daily lives and compels us toward gratitude and generosity.
Hey folks, welcome to our Abound in Hope podcast with Imprint Church. My name is Darren Larson.
I'm Tom McGregor.
And it's great to have you with us. We appreciate you listening to us. And as always, if you have things you want us to talk about in the podcast, you can email us at podcast@imprintchurch.org. And we would love to dialogue on those things. But for now, we are in a part two of what is most likely going to be a part three of kind of a justice series that we're doing. And we're just being honest with you, man. Justice is a hijacked word. It seems like culture has hijacked it, and it's a very biblical word. And so we want to actually say, what does the Bible say about justice? And what should a Christian think about justice? And so last time that we talked about this with McGregor, we talked about Micah 6. And it was funny because we kind of just did a exegesis of the passage of Micah 6 instead of really talking about justice per se, which is my favorite thing to do, honestly. But we also felt like what would be really helpful is to get a little more practical, because we never defined biblical justice, you know. And so while I thought Micah 6, you know, 1 through 8 was super helpful and wonderful, I thought we'd connect it this week to a little more of what the Bible says about justice and how we apply it to our own lives. Don't you think that's a good idea, McGregor?
I think it's a great idea. A solid biblical definition is a great place to start.
Totally.
We saw in Micah 6, 1 through 8 that worship really isn't about the commodification of our liturgy. You know, singing the right songs on Sunday and taking the communion in a posture that looks right, but it has everything to do with the kind of performative embodiment right. of the character and activity of our God.
Yes.
And that actually becomes an act of worship. And then you see that Micah like connects that to mm-hmm. justice and mm-hmm. mercy and humble relationship. Mm-hmm. And so having a definition of, well, what is justice? What is mercy? What is humility and relationship? Since we're in a justice series, we thought let's define biblical justice.
Yeah.
And so we have a ton of Bible for you, so that these aren't our ideas, but we're looking to God and His Word
yeah.
to help us understand what He means when He tells us what He desires.
Can we discuss really briefly on how we think culture has hijacked the word justice? This isn't in our yeah. notes, but I mean, I think this is really important, because when I say that, I mean, people have this fill in the blank of their mind, and I think they forget that they've been really informed and formed mm-hmm. by culture and their definition in good and bad ways, honestly.
Totally. You
know? Yeah. And so what do you think that has happened with the word justice when a person hears it now?
Yeah. I mean, I can't say for certain what other people's experiences are, but I know my own leanings. Mm-hmm. And I think what is at the problem is that we've reduced justice to one of two things instead of keeping those two things together. And so the Christian subculture has reduced justice to retributive justice.
Right. Yep.
Because of our limited view of the atonement. We've reduced the atonement to just one thing. When mm-hmm. the Bible talks about this beautiful, there's a book that I haven't read, but it's got a good title.
The Mosaic of the Atonement.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I may have read that.
So it's great, because the atonement is much more robust mm-hmm. than just penal substitution. However, penal substitution is a big deal and we shouldn't bail yeah. on it. But yeah. when we reduce
it's the heart of the atonement yeah. as that book argues, actually,
yeah.
which is great.
And yeah. I wholeheartedly agree.
Yep.
But when we reduce it to just that, then justice is about retribution, giving mm-hmm. people what they deserve or the mm-hmm. consequences of their actions. Mm-hmm. And so you get that, right, mm-hmm. in the Christian subculture, or even in the culture as a whole, you know, law and order.
Yep.
This totally. Whole idea totally. Of protecting the rights of people by mm-hmm. giving people what they deserve.
And let's be clear, that is one picture of
yeah.
justice. That's what we're saying.
Part of it.
We're not saying that's not
no.
justice. And so when you hear that, don't think, oh, law and order is not part of justice, because...
Well, and careful with that phrase too, because that's gotten hijacked.
You do.
Yeah.
It has been hijacked.
So,
yes.
So humans typically reduce things, mm-hmm. you know, because it's easier to handle a small thing mm-hmm. than
We categorize things really quickly in our minds. Yes.
Yeah. So that's one part of the equation. But the other part, which actually the Bible emphasizes more, kind of like penal substitution is emphasized the most as an ingredient in the atonement.
Yep.
This other part of justice is emphasized the most as an ingredient in a biblical vision of justice. Mm-hmm. And that's this idea of restorative justice.
Nice. Yep. I like retributive and restorative. Those are the two images of justice that we see. So where does restorative justice show up in the Bible?
Well, let's go back to your original question with culture.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Good call.
So typically when you hear social justice, this is what people are talking about. They've reduced justice to something that's a social issue.
Yeah.
And they've reduced the solution of social issues to a justice that not only addresses the societal issue, but only does it in a restorative way. Mm. So it's not protective. Mm-hmm. And it leaves out this holistic biblical picture of justice. Mm. And so if we can smush those things back together, you get the big picture of justice. But today we really want to emphasize the things that the Bible emphasizes in the ingredients of justice without forgetting the other part. So so we're smushing those things back together, but we're going to investigate the restorative aspect.
Yes.
So as we're going through this, we're not bailing on the important ingredient of retributive justice.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
But we're focusing on the thing that in our context is most often left behind.
Which is interesting because in my mind, and maybe I'm jumping ahead of ourselves a little bit here, but restorative justice is much more individualized to each person in the fact that they can be a part of justice in a sense than retributive justice. Although I think seem like especially Christians sometimes want to be part of retributive justice, you know, in a sense. And that problems can arise from that, right? I mean,
huge legal issues.
What does the Lord say? Vengeance is mine, declares the Lord, right? Like there's a piece of that where, and why does he say that? Probably because we want retributive justice in our world.
Dave's imprecatory psalms.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's another piece of that. Don't lose the fact that we can desire that and pray for that. And if the cause is right, you know, have certain actions involved.
We should be angry at evil.
Yeah, we should be angry at evil. But it's much clearer in the Bible how we should be involved in restorative justice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially as a picture of Genesis to Revelation, I think, you know. Mm-hmm. So talk about that a little bit. What does it look like? What does the Bible paint? Going back to my second question that I tried to ask a little too early. How does the Bible paint that?
So the first place that I think of is Genesis 18. Hmm. There's this cool little passage where Yahweh shows up as three guys and like gives a house call to Abraham and Sarah. And Yahweh is talking about, the promised son and, how he's going to show up again in a year and Sarah's going to have this kid. And anyway, the whole scenario is awesome. But then he says this really interesting thing. He's like, should I let Abraham in on what I'm about to do in Sodom? And then he says, well, because I've chosen him so that he can command his children, his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice. Mm. And so the way of the Lord, the way of Yahweh, is to do righteousness and justice. Mm. And so in order to understand biblical justice, we have to understand righteousness first. Mm. And typically when we think of righteousness, it's just about being a good moral person.
Yep. Yep.
It's maybe ethical.
Something you're declared, something. Yeah. There's pieces. Yeah. Yep.
But the biblical vision for righteousness is about an ethical moral disposition towards others in your relationships. Good. It's treating other people as the image of God.
Yeah.
And so, of course, that has ethical moral dimensions. If I'm in right relationship with you, I'm not going to steal your stuff.
Totally.
I'm not going to try and kill you.
Yep.
I'm not going to lie to you. Righteousness is a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And justice is what happens when righteousness is broken.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go into this idea of justice or mishpat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And and you start reading through
Mishpat's the Hebrew word.
Yeah, Hebrew word. Thanks
for justice, just so you know. Yes, yep.
Tzedakah and Mishpat is the phrase there.
Yep.
In Hebrew. And you start looking through where justice shows up in the Bible, mm-hmm. and especially in the Hebrew Bible.
Mm-hmm.
When the Hebrew Bible is translated into the Greek,
mm-hmm.
they use this word to translate justice that then the New Testament writers pick up
mm-hmm.
and use to mean both righteousness or justice,
right. yeah.
depending on
yep.
the context.
Yep.
And so, like, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness
mm-hmm.
is most probably meaning blessed are those who hunger and thirst for
yeah.
justice.
Yeah, totally.
There's other places where Jesus, in Matthew, I think it is, Matthew 23:33, he says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint, dill, and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law." And he says, "Justice and mercy and faith." And
yeah.
Doesn't yep. that kind of sound like the outline to Micah 6:8?
It sounds
6:8?
A little bit Micah 6:8. Yeah, yep. I think we may have mentioned that, but I can't quite remember. So yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, you get into the biblical data. And so I want to read through some of these and just think about what the picture of justice is in
yeah.
each of these passages.
Yeah, going beyond just consequences for actions of injustice, think about the bigger picture of the beauty of justice here.
Yep.
And so, yeah, absorb these scriptures. They're
so
beautiful.
So there's Exodus 23:6-8. The command is, "You shall not pervert the justice due to your poor in his suit. Keep far from a false charge and do not slay the innocent and righteous. For I will not acquit the wicked. And you shall take no bribe, for a bribe blinds the officials and subverts the cause of those who are in the right." So justice is something that can be subverted by the powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Justice is something that overwhelmingly affects people that aren't in power. In Isaiah 1:17.
Yeah, Exodus 23, it's due to the poor here. Like
yeah.
there's a definition of a person that's having injustice done to them.
Yep.
Totally.
Isaiah 1:17, learn to do good, seek justice. So check this out. Correct oppression, bring justice to the fatherless, and
mm-hmm.
plead the widow's cause.
Mm-hmm.
So the headline is seek justice. It's something that doesn't happen mm-hmm. accidentally. It's
mm-hmm.
it's something that needs to be pursued. And then it's correct oppression.
Yeah.
It's not just like, you know, put bad people in jail.
Make the wrongs right.
Yeah. It bends back
yeah.
all the way.
Yep.
One of my favorites is Proverbs 31:8-9. Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of those, or rights of all who are destitute. Open
mm-hmm.
your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights or plead the cause of the poor and needy.
Good.
And so you see there's people that are vulnerable to oppression,
mm-hmm.
that are marginalized in the culture, and it's not enough for them to speak out.
Totally.
But because
totally.
Of the differential,
yep.
they actually need an advocate.
Yep, totally.
And so this is like the idea of equity.
Yep.
Equality is, a buddy just sent me this, it's the Giving Tree, and there's one guy on a
yeah.
6-foot ladder, and he can reach the apples, and another guy, the tree bends the wrong way, and he's got a 12-foot ladder, and he can't even get to him.
Yeah, totally.
Equality is both people have a 6-foot ladder.
Yep.
Equity is, we'll give him a 15-foot ladder so he can reach the apple.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some people, everybody can speak out.
Well, that idea is that there are certain people that cannot speak for themselves
yep.
or have started behind. And let's just make this really practical before you think that we have an agenda of some sort. This can go from anyone who cannot speak for themselves.
Yep.
Like, obviously in the culture, the biggest one right now is people of color.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge one. But I mean, we would take this as far as the unborn.
Absolutely.
Sex trafficking.
Well, think about folks that are in decline. They're in their old age.
Yes.
Marginalized
yeah.
by the culture.
Yep. Yep.
Thrown
in a old folks home or something
totally.
Like that, which is not always wrong, I understand. And that's very complicated. We understand the emotion of that, even dealing with my own family members who've
yeah.
we've had to make the decision of putting them into a home for the care that they needed towards the end of their life, you know. But and then you think, man, that's where COVID broke out here in America,
yeah.
right here in Kirkland,
totally.
Right? In a place where people were kind of
isolated,
marginalized, you know. That's, and so we're not taking this to be one people group or one personality or one angry mob. We're saying there's a lot of people who are oppressed, and the picture in the Bible is restorative here.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
I mean, you can go through Jeremiah 22:3. This is what the Lord says: do what is just and right, rescue from the hand of the oppressor the one who has been robbed. And then Psalm 146, I want to bring it back to this because our picture of justice has to come from the perfectly just source.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it doesn't come from a perfectly just source, then it's always going to be tainted by our own, you know, our own sin.
Totally.
And yep. So Psalm 146 looks at the character of God on display. And it says, you know, there's this preamble, but then it says, he remains forever faithful. He vindicates the oppressed. He gives food to the hungry. The Lord releases the imprisoned. The Lord gives sight to the blind. The Lord lifts up all who are bent over. The Lord loves the godly. And he protects the resident foreigner, so the refugee. He lifts up the fatherless and the widow, but he opposes the wicked. And so there's this beautiful picture of God's heart for the people that can't defend themselves.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think, to me, justice is one of the major themes in the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me personally, I was totally dead, unable to help myself, unaware of my own inability or my own sin, but then also unaware of the spiritual realities that were influencing me.
Totally.
Either through, you know, structures in our culture, and influences, or directly. And, Jesus comes and he rescues the poor,
totally,
and the oppressed. And, and the way that he does that, is personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say Jesus, declared his mission to be the mission of you know, saving those of the fatherless, the oppressed. The I mean, this was Jesus's mission, the Isaiah vision of his life, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, how can you not say the very mission that Jesus gave himself is not a major theme of the gospel, right? I mean, that's pretty amazing. It's pretty clear to me.
Yeah, Luke 4, he's announcing the year of Jubilee.
Yeah, totally.
That was this institution that God gives to the people in a way to protect the vulnerable so they don't lose their land and don't lose their ability to be a part of a culture that represents him well. So biblical justice is essentially seeking out vulnerable people who are being taken advantage of, taking care of them. It means taking steps towards advocating for the vulnerable and taking steps to change social structures that prevent justice. So it's, I think a summary is making other people's problems my own.
Interesting. And I mean, we've pointed out, I think through scripture, from Exodus to Psalms basically here, that this is the vision what God has for his own character and heart for the world. And we can pretty much with conviction say it's also placed upon followers of Christ to have this same vision for themselves in the world. As you just said, seeking out the vulnerable and those who are being taken advantage of and taking care of them, making their problems very important to you as well. You know?
Yeah. You look back at God's question to Cain, and Cain's response of "Am I my brother's keeper?"
Totally.
With the implication,
yeah,
you are.
Totally,
we are responsible to one another.
Yeah,
that's the way that this whole universe has been created.
Yeah, so not to be without controversy in this moment, let me try to throw some controversy in here for a second, because this is where the rubber hits the road just a tad when it comes to this this idea of justice. That's why it just gets to my heart and hurts my soul a little bit when I see Christians, either living like this idea of like, I worked hard to get to where I am. I've pulled myself up by my own bootstraps. Why can't these other people work hard and get to where I've been, you know, or even say something like, man, I started with nothing as well, you know, and you know, why can't another person work hard to get themselves to where I am today? And I go, yeah, but part of this is the vision that God's given to us to not just think of life that way. And that's not saying that you didn't work hard to get to where you're at.
Oh, no, I'm sure you did.
You probably did. But it's saying that you're also recognizing that other people may not have done that yet, or they might not be able to, or something like that. And it gives us this sense of compassion for them as mm-hmm. opposed to a sense of judgment upon their lives, you know?
Yeah.
And that, I think that irks people a little bit. That gets a little bit under the skin because you're saying like, oh my gosh, you know, I can't believe they're getting all these handouts that I never got, you know? And I go, well, that's a little bit of the character of God for people.
Yeah, isn't it? Like tale of the vine dressers, you know?
Yes. Yeah, totally. Yep. And so that's a little controversial. But and again, I'm not talking about social structures. I'm not talking about welfare. I'm not talking about any of the welfare system of governance anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about a genuine attitude that we should have that says, I want to care for the poor, the vulnerable, the needy, all of those things. And it doesn't matter how I got to where I am. And I'm just going to thank God for the fact that he's brought me here. And I'm going to care for those that are not there, you know?
Totally.
So I don't know. That feels controversial to me, but it doesn't seem like it should be.
It shouldn't,
you know what I'm
be.
Saying?
Like, so think about this, like, how did I get to be a pastor mm-hmm. at Imprint Church? Mm-hmm. Well, I need to,
it was your hair.
Maybe the hair, but
it was the hair.
Well, how did I get the hair? Did I work really hard to get the hair?
Oh,
or is
yeah,
it
yeah,
the product of like the people I was born to?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Did I work really hard to get the brains that I have? No. I mean, recently, yeah. But that's only the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I did everything possible to fry them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's God's grace and generosity that I was born with the potential that I worked with. I mean, and you can go through the list. Like, why was I born in America in the 20th century,
totally.
Not 21st? I'm not that young.
Totally.
Versus, you know,
yep.
like
yep.
Zimbabwe in the 1600s.
Totally. Yeah.
And so there's an element of God's generosity and his wisdom. And we don't have the perspective and wisdom necessary to start making those judgments about other people.
Yep.
Instead, we've been called to follow God into his generous mission of doing justice and saving people.
That's really good. Yeah, totally. You know, I even go back to, we mentioned Exodus a minute ago, but I go back to the story of Israel in the Old Testament and their role to be a blessing to the nations, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think of it often in the context of how the people of God should be in our world today, you know, and how often we are not that way. But the story of the people of God in the Old Testament is a story of, let's just put it this way, a story of showing justice and showing the care and character of God to people around them. And I know you can get a little bit into the weeds of talking about what's going on with Joshua, what's going on with Judges and all that kind of stuff, which was specific in a time and a place. But we know from Deuteronomy chapter 30, I think, the idea of the Israelites were to be a blessing to the nations and to show them who God was and how much more we should carry this role in our world today as well.
Well, so the prophets pick this up. They're like, essentially, here was the intention. God chose Abraham to bless the whole world through, and Israel's failed. I mean, you don't get... honestly, Israel's story is tragic. You know, they have this personal encounter with the living God, and he institutes this kingdom of justice and mercy and care for not only Israel, but also of welcoming the resident alien and protecting the vulnerable. And the main reason that Israel gets kicked out of the land, and the prophets, especially the Book of the 12, you know, the minor prophets, they say the reason they're getting kicked out is because of injustice.
Yeah, totally, totally.
And like Ezekiel says, well, I know what the problem is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the heart.
Yep.
And we have the benefit of a new heart
in
a way that Israel never did. And so how much more should we reflect the justice of God?
Totally, totally. Yeah, it's a really good word. I think it was Amos that I was reading the other day, where the picture of Amos there is that, you know, this kind of, I think it was made famous by a John Foreman song, forget all your, you know, your festivals, forget all your shows.
Yep.
Instead, let there be a flood of justice, you know? an endless procession of righteous living. You know, that's the picture that the prophets want us to live. When you said the book, The Twelve, it reminded me of that. I'm pretty sure that's in Amos.
Yep, it is.
Yeah, I can't remember. When you get reading the minor prophets, you forget which one you're in as you're reading them all, if you know what I mean.
Usually just call it the Book of the Twelve.
You're like the Book of the Twelve. Yeah, right. Sounds very nerdy.
Zephaniah. So. Yeah, totally. How do I even pronounce some of these names?
Okay, so let's carry this one step further and talk a little bit the New Testament picture then of justice, because it seemed like we jumped into the Old Testament a little bit there.
Yep.
But let's, how do we get this from, and again, we've talked about Micah, we've talked about all these scripture in the Old Testament, but how do we turn the corner to the New Testament here to talk a little bit about what justice looks like for the individual there?
Yeah, I think that the clearest picture we get of God's heart is always going to be through Jesus, mm-hmm. and because justice is so important to God. I mean, he cares about his creation, right? And so it crushes his heart when he sees one of his image bearers treated as anything less than the fully dignified and valuable human being that he created them to be.
Yeah.
Like, he died for that person with chronic mental illness.
Totally.
That's living on the streets, talking to themselves. And I mean, he died for the person that is like living with advanced AIDS.
Yeah,
he died for the person that is unborn yet. And he died for the old person in memory care who can't speak up for themselves because they're not who they used to be.
Yep, totally.
And so Jesus gives us a picture of God's heart for justice. I love that that he teaches on it a lot, and then he also just does it. I love that he gets mad about the scribes and Pharisees when he heals on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
The guy reaches out his hand, and Jesus says, you know, is it lawful basically to save a life on the Sabbath or not? And they don't want to give an answer because they'll be caught.
Totally.
And he looks around in wrath.
Yeah, totally.
Like the word is anger, but the Greek word is best translated as wrath.
It's wrath. I remember that too. Yeah.
And you know, that's the heart of God.
Yeah.
Because he cares so deeply.
Yeah.
That he's willing to die for us.
Yeah, it's interesting how the religious people worried about what the other religious people were going to say about Jesus's view of justice. You know, if that's not incriminating to us in the church, then if that's not convicting, incriminating, that's a bad word to use. If that's not convicting to us, that's a better way to say it, because that leads to a desire to change. You know.
Yeah, I think we need to be as wise and discerning as possible in our application of justice. We don't want to perpetuate a problem, right?
Totally.
We don't want to enable, but I think we should be infinitely more concerned with trying to do justice than if somebody deserves it or not. Because I know I didn't deserve the justice of God.
Yep.
You look through the life of Jesus, and I think it's a good outline for this kind of justice, this biblical justice. He humbles himself, becomes something he wasn't. You know, the Son incarnates as Jesus.
Yep.
He comes to be with us.
Yeah. Because in Philippians 2, again, he considered himself nothing. You know, like he, even though he was God, he took on the very form of the lowest of the low. Yeah, I mean, this is like, that's the foundation of justice in so many ways, you know, it just reminded me of that.
Yeah. And then Hebrews, like,
beautiful picture.
He's somebody that can actually like sympathize with our weaknesses because he condescended to be with us.
Totally.
And then he's for us.
Yeah.
You know, he is for us through the Father. He's our advocate.
Yeah.
He's our mediator. And he is not only for us, but he died for us.
Yep. Yeah.
And then he rises again for us.
Yep.
And then he gives himself to us.
Yep.
And he gives his life through us.
Totally. Totally.
And if Micah talks and you know, the Psalms, and if the Bible talks about our understanding of justice originating in the character and activity of God and being the not only the inspiration, but the power by which we do justice. Then I can think of nobody more fitting to take our standard from.
Yeah, the pouring out of the Spirit unto believers for the sake of living for other people is the empowerment that we have to do justice in the world, that we have the example of it and the empowerment of doing it. That's a beautiful picture. So I think to kind of close this thing out a little bit here, I think, so this week a little bit, so we kind of exegeted a passage last week. This week we're talking about individual, I think how a Christian should view justice from a biblical perspective, not just retributive, but restorative. Mm-hmm. And next week, I think we're going to look a little bit about how the church corporately should handle justice. So come back for that one if you want to hear a stick of dynamite. But to end this one, I think we should say, what does it look like for us individually to have justice in our actions, you know? And so just give us a few ideas, McGregor, on how you would say, like, how do we apply this to our lives each day?
Yeah. So, let's look to Jesus. He becomes one of us so that he can understand us. Mm-hmm. He can sympathize or empathize with us. And so I think there's an element of understanding, education, and empathy mm-hmm. that's required to do justice well. Mm-hmm. I mean, justice requires a lot of wisdom because it's a complex world.
Yes.
And so you want to do that.
Yep.
You want to cultivate empathy for, the marginalized, the oppressed, the vulnerable.
Yep. People that you even disagree with, like the LGBTQ community and those who are struggling with gender identity, some of those things, man, that our goal is not to I think our goal would be to have compassion for them, you know,
that's
and
a
that's,
great word.
That's what you're saying, like understanding empathy, like the, you know, the deep gut compassion that Jesus had. I mean, he looked the same idea where Jesus looked at the religious people in furious anger. Jesus looked at the sinners and had deep compassion, mm-hmm. that gut level feeling of people who are just, they don't understand the gospel. They don't understand justice. They don't understand the vision of God's hope for them, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if we can have that empathy, that goes a long ways, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
And then you have to build relationships.
Yeah.
People have been, here's an example. If you're working with, young people who have been sex trafficked, the way that you relate to them is going to be different than mm-hmm. if you're working with somebody who hasn't been traumatized.
Yep.
If you quote the Bible, it's very probable that that's going to be a triggering event for them because somebody else in their life has utilized God's word.
Sure.
In a sick and twisted way.
Yeah.
And so building a relationship of trust and care where they learn that you actually mm-hmm. care and love them. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what God does with us, right? Mm-hmm. He over and over and over proves that we can trust him.
Totally.
And so you want to build a real relationship. It's not enough just to understand cognitively, but you want to develop, it's that making other people's problems my problems. Yep. It's that making other people's consequences my consequences.
Yep. Yep.
Jesus stands in the gap for us. We can stand in the gap for others.
So can I stop you for one more second with her? So relationship, understanding, empathy, compassion, all these things, it just reminds me one more time of a thing that I've seen kind of coming across, especially through like social media today, and that's the anger I feel like people have towards one another, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes people think it's kind of a righteous anger, if you will, or a just anger, to use the word we're in right now. But I think in this sense, we are, and we should be, we said earlier, we're very clear, we should be angry at the evil in the world, and we should be angry about the things that are causing the brokenness and the sin and the destruction of our world. But there also is that weirdness that we need to be really careful with how we direct our anger, right? Mm-hmm. And again, you said living wisdom, but man, if you find yourself more angry with people who are protesting right now than you are compassionate towards people who are dying without the good news of Jesus Christ or something like that, mm-hmm. you might just want to be really careful about where you're directing your emotion to, if you will.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying there's not a sense of grief over some of the ways that people are doing, making their voice heard or creating chaos
in
our
cities. I'm deeply grieved by what's going on in Portland.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I love that city, and it's hard to see
something
that, could have actually affected change.
Yep. Yep.
Devolve into something that is more aligned with chaos.
And it's the same with the CHOP or the CHAZ, whatever you want to call it down here in Capitol Hill. Man, I've wandered those streets before with my kids and hung out.
But empathy would say, I see what the human wisdom leads to, mm-hmm. but I also see the problem.
Good.
And so empathy isn't about endorsement, but it is about understanding
good
both your friend and your enemy, because who are we supposed to love? Well, everybody. If you're more concerned with who gets what than you are with loving people, then I think you've missed a big part of what justice is.
Bottom line is, be careful with your affections, right? Because your affections can be super negative or over the top positive of acceptance, you know? So like, you want to be really careful with those things. And so I think your words of empathy and understanding are really important and fall into that. And that's a really practical way we can handle this right now, is just figuring out how to deal with some of the internal struggle that we have with the injustice in the world, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I think something you said earlier is a good reminder that's hard for Western people, and that's to remember that our struggle isn't against flesh and blood.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
There is real personal spiritual evil that influences not just individuals, but whole structures and people groups.
Yeah. Honestly, like, if you've wandered through Capitol Hill before, you feel a spiritual battle walking down there. Like, you can feel it, you know. It's just, there's a sense of like, man, there's a fight in light and darkness down here, you know? And man, it's part of the Christian job to bring light to a place like that.
Yeah, because that's unjust. Totally. It's unjust that there's this like personal spiritual evil that's oppressing humans who were created in God's image.
Totally. I felt the same way when I'm down on Aurora Avenue, you know, kind of heading into the city, anywhere from about 105th down towards the city. You just feel the oppression and darkness there. The sex trafficking there is so brutal. The prostitution. I mean, I've felt the evil there, and it's unjust. I mean, it's unjust. Yep, that's what it is. Totally. And so, man, you absolutely feel that. And so, you know, we have a couple options there. We can get seething angry and yell and scream and things like that. Or we can say, Lord, would you save? Would you send people who are just? Would you shine your light in this darkness, you know? Yeah. So, sorry, I had to jump more into that one. There's more you have.
Totally. So, yeah, there's two more that good. I think would be important for us. That's one of them, is to understand that this is a whole person issue. Justice is about the whole person.
Good.
It's not just about the social aspect, but it includes that. Mm. It's not just about the physical aspect, but it includes that. Mm. And it's not just about the spiritual aspect, but it includes that.
Yeah.
There's a holistic issue, and you see Jesus entering into that. Mm. He's not just saving souls. But there is a real future material kingdom of heaven that someday will invade earth. Mm. And he's saving us into that. Mm. And so material injustice is important. Mm. He's saving us, not just individuals, but he's saving a people. And he wants all people to be saved.
Yeah.
And so there is a social issue to that. But when we only address one part of the injustice without recognizing the holistic issue, we can often become a problem of injustice. So view holistically. Hmm. And then final one, I think, and maybe you've got some more, but I just think you should get involved. Hmm. Just start doing it. Anything that is gross to you, as far as like, you recognize this is not the picture of biblical flourishing, whether it's addiction or mental health or sex trafficking or abortion or people dying alone in a strange place without a clue of what's going on, or, you know, an entire people group being marginalized because of the color of their skin, or, you know, pick something.
Yeah.
It'd be better if you were wrong in trying.
Yes.
God can move you.
Yes.
Than if you try to get it perfect.
Man, I think of faces and names when you talk about this. Honestly, I think of a guy named Bob in our church who stands outside of an abortion clinic in Everett with a sign that just simply says, "Can I pray for you?" You know? Mm-hmm. And he doesn't hold a sign up of a picture of an aborted baby or something like that that creates just animosity and a big separation, but a simple ask of, "Can I pray for you?" You know, and that is a work of justice.
Yeah.
I think of people in our church who have gone through a study on racial reconciliation, and they've been asking themselves hard questions about what they believe and what their culture is and what they've held to as near and dear. And I say that they're getting involved and they're struggling with these things, you know. Man, I just, when you start talking about getting involved, I just think of some people in our church who have done those things, because it's so easy to sit back in Monday morning quarterback about all the injustice and our opinion about how we should fix the unjust things in the world. What's really difficult is to jump deep into it and to see yourself becoming a light in a dark place, you know?
Yeah. Imagine Jesus as he's getting ready to become incarnate.
Oh yeah.
Like, can you imagine leaving the glory and righteousness and it's like
totally
getting in the game is a huge risk.
Can you imagine Jesus up there just going, I know this is a bad view of the Trinity, so don't go with this, but so don't think theologically right now, just think practically with me. But can you imagine him just going, man, they can fix this themselves. Just looking at God and saying like, I've given them all they needed. They should, man, I've laid the everything perfectly for them. They should just take care of it, you know? It's ridiculous. I mean,
thank God he didn't.
Thank God he didn't. So, yeah. So get involved. Yeah. Get involved. Totally.
Yeah. If you need ideas on how to do that, you can shoot me an email. You can look on Generosity Church. Yeah. There's a link on our website. Or you can pick something that's just around the corner.
Like, totally. Yep.
You know, look, here's what you do. Pray to the Lord to open your eyes to the injustice that's around you, and within your ability, by his power and grace, to get involved in, and then ask him to like plow up your heart and develop, you know, care. I mean, man, amazing things will happen.
Amen. All right, you guys. So, consider this restorative justice as a calling of Christ followers because of the Christ that we are following. So thanks, McGregor. You put some time and effort into this one this week. I appreciate that. Really great to chat with you. Thanks for joining us from our Imprint Church studios today, and we'll see you next week.
Toodaloo.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.